Does that look like Cornelius, man? What kind of hold they got over the Vale?
That is precisely what fascinates me, Master Lauren. But I doubt that we shall find a satisfactory answer from any of these poor wretches.
We still going into Brampton?
Though I fear that it's a waste of time, we can but try. After all, we do not have anywhere better to go.
The next time Ryan recovered consciousness, he was surprised, to put it mildly, to realize that he was having sex with someone. Not making love. Certainly not that. And it would be more accurate to say that someone was having sex with him. He was spread-eagled, tied to the corners of the bed, with thick cords that held him motionless. Someone was squatting astride him, gripping his thighs with her heels, and riding him like a stallion.
Yes. Take him, sister. Take him.
For a moment, Ryan felt his erection begin to shrink and diminish. The woman felt it too, and she leaned forward over him, her naked breasts brushing his chest, her powerful hands roaming over his body. Despite her charnel house breath, Ryan felt himself recover and cursed himself for it. He was very close to the edge. Again, she somehow sensed it, and she began to tremble around him, fluttering like a butterfly.
Oh, give me your essence, that we all can live.
Ryan sensed spectators drawing closer to the bed. He tasted their sweat and their stinking breath hanging over him like a foul miasma. But there was nothing Ryan could do to hold himself back. The woman's power was incredible. It felt as though she were draining his heart, lungs, brain, and soul, sucking the life force from him. Ryan's back arched as if he were in the grip of a fearsome poison, lifting him off the bed, his head thrown back, the straining muscles in his neck like whipcord. A tiny part of his mind wondered whether his spinal cord were going to snap with the burning intensity of his racing orgasm. His mouth was open, and he could hear his own breathing, feel his heart pounding so hard that it felt like it could leap clear out of his chest. There was a terrible pressure behind his eye. Ryan could feel warmth across his hands, where his own nails had drawn blood. The woman raised herself, then dropped down onto him like a stone.
Yes! Now!
Christy went back to her room to use the bathroom, admiring the blue-flowered porcelain of the bowl and the dark oak seat. On her way to rejoin JB and Mildred, she paused to look through the stained glass window that dominated the front landing. It was a complex pattern, showing a frosty landscape. A hare limped trembling across it, and a band of hunters dressed like medieval peasants were trudging through the snow, carrying muskets and longbows. In the background was a house that bore an uncanny resemblance to the Cornelius mansion. The main trail to the house was visible through the distorting panes of the colored leaded glass. Christy saw movement and realized that the three figures she saw through the glass had to be Doc, Dean, and Jack, returning from Brampton. She hurried down the stairs, stopping in the hall as she noticed the slim figure of Norman standing still in the shadows beyond a huge seat with the word Sapientia carved above it in Gothic letters.
Where's Ryan?
Norman minced across to stand close to her. Christy caught the musky scent of perfume. She noticed that his hair was dyed, an odd mixture of ginger and lilac.
I think his treatment will soon be complete.
Will he come back down here?
More likely they'll take him to the bedroom, Christy.
I'll just see Doc and the others. Then I'll go up and wait for him.
Well, of course, whatever you wish.
Ryan came around to find his wrists and ankles were free, though they felt chafed and sore. His mouth was dry, and it seemed as if his genitals had been sandblasted and then boiled in molasses. It was a bizarre sensation, burning and painful, and exceedingly sweet.
Why?
Why not?
Why me?
Because you are a man of unusual strength and character.
We are not as others.
Yeah, I figured that. What I don't get is just who you are and where you come from.
A hand brushed his cheeks, making him wince.
Don't worry. We don't mean to kill you. but we need you. Need you in ways you can't begin to understand.
Within the day, you will know more. That I promise. Within the day.
Mildred had become bored with the latest puzzle when it became clear that there were several pieces missing. JB had also given up and found a tattered paperback. Mildred left him deep in the book while she wandered out and across the hall, passing an elderly woman in a mob cap, lethargically polishing an elm bench. Mildred climbed to the second floor, where most of the rooms were locked and bolted, giving the impression that they hadn't been opened for 100 years. She nearly passed a room without noticing it, as it was concealed by a long tapestry, so faded that it was impossible to tell what its subject had been. But it moved slightly as Mildred passed, giving the clue that it hid a doorway. Glancing around to make sure that she wasn't being observed, Mildred slipped behind the dusty hanging and tested the brass door handle. The open door revealed a musty chamber, lined with books, its shutters bolted shut. She saw a number of oil lamps standing ready, each with a supply of self-lights at its side. She closed the door behind her and fumbled to strike a light and illuminate the room. The oil-soaked wick caught, and Mildred slid the glass chimney over it, quickly trimming it down so that it gave off a steady golden glow. The books seemed to be in far better condition than most of those on the first floor. Mildred walked around, holding the lamp raised in her hand, examining the titles as she went. The collection seemed to be split into two distinct halves, both equally well-thumbed. The more modern books were textbooks by publishers familiar to Mildred. Most of them seemed to deal with the subject of genetic engineering, manipulation of DNA, reversing the helix, and molding the new were just three typical titles from the collection. But it was the older books that Mildred found more fascinating. Many had full Morocco bindings or were beautifully calf-bound with superb marbled endpapers. They smelled of age, and a significant number were dated before 1800 with decal-edged paper and F's for S's. A book entitled A Person of Night had a frightening frontispiece of a gibbering demon with scaly wings, tearing the living heart from a human baby. Another called Almost the Future seemed to be about reading tarot cards. Virtually every book in the large section covered some aspect of mysticism, every classic title that Mildred had ever heard of, plus hundreds that were grotesquely arcane. Of course, there was a copy of the Necronomicon by the mad Arab Abdul Al-Azred, bound in human skin, bearing the imprimatur of the University of Miskatonic. Mildred opened it cautiously, breathing in the chill wind that blows between the worlds, the angular printing on the yellowed parchment seeming to blur and shift its nameless shape under her eyes. Mildred shuddered, feeling cold. She wiped her hands down her pants to try to remove the clinging damp stickiness. She picked up the lamp and walked back toward the door.
Whew, there are some seriously sick people in this house, Millie.
Doc, Dean, and Jack had just found their way back to the room with the puzzles as Mildred re-entered. Christy was already there, sitting on the edge of one of the long sofas, her hands clasped around her knees. JB had finished skim-reading the paperback and was standing by the empty fireplace. He looked up immediately as Mildred came into the room, standing and walking to her side, taking her hand.
You all right?
I've been better. Found this library of some, well, strange books. Science at an advanced level from the very end of the last century, just before the final war, and some ancient volumes on witchcraft and devil worship and all kinds of obscene black magic. Nasty stuff.
JB squeezed her hand tightly. Mildred turned toward Doc and the others.
Find anything down there in Brampton to prove your theory?
Doc sat in a deep armchair.
Quite a hike, that trail from down by the river. I fear that I'm getting too old for all this tarry hooting.
Dean sat on the floor, leaning his back against the sofa by Christy.
Some kids nearly shit themselves when they saw Jack. Thought he was a member of the family out hunting soft meat.
Our young friend here may not know it, but I suspect that he might have put his finger on the heart of the matter.
It's like what we saw when down with Johannes. Real fear. Nobody talked proper.